All right, Muscleheads, we are winding down the first kaiju extermination arc in the Kaneko Man anime here on the Super Muscle Cast. This is TG Moxley, joined once again by the Punch King, and I think that we should just get right to the episode because we've got plenty to cover today, because we are starting with Kaneko Man 5A, Kenkotsu Man's Muscle versus Bone Battle.
That's right. This is going to be very interesting. This is an episode where I feel like things really start happening, and we're kind of breaking out of a bit of the Kaneko Man is pathetic and let's all laugh at him holding pattern that a lot of the last episodes have had us in, even though they've been pretty entertaining in their own right. So let's get to it, and I think we're going to get on with the story a little bit.
Absolutely. So we start this episode with a spaceship that is laughing and careening through outer space, a bunch of goofy-ass skulls all festooned on the side of it. You know what that means. Kenkotsu Man is finally showing up for his battle with Kaneko Man. So, as we've mentioned in the past, this is chapter 18 of the comic, episode 5 of the anime. Now, back on Earth, Kaneko Man is out for a stroll in his Matthew Lesko cream and red suit. He's got a bunch of flowers in his hand, no doubt picked from some public park. And he's on his way to see Marie Nakaido at the Sunflower Kindergarten. It almost rains on his parade, but he's able to duck behind a tree and smile at his good fortune as the sun comes back out, and he's blessed with a day when Meat is off on other business, and he's free to visit Mary at the kindergarten without competition.
Well, there are a couple of problems with that. For one thing, it's Sunday. I like that they put a big comical lock and chain on the door of the kindergarten, or on the gate of the kindergarten. That seems a little excessive, but I guess in the world that they live in, you might take those measures. Also, the kids happen to be hanging out just over the wall from their school so that they can heckle Kaneko Man and make fun of what an idiot he is for coming to the school on a Sunday. What were they doing there? Maybe they just hang out near the school? I don't know.
That is a good question, and there certainly is a long and rich history of Kaneko Man being heckled and assailed by random passersby that actually I recently had the opportunity to read. It was uploaded earlier this year on Mangadex, in case anyone had missed it, as I had. The initial unserialized first chapter of Kaneko Man that isn't included in any of the published volumes is up on Mangadex, and in fact the very first scene in it features Kaneko Man flying through the air and essentially being knocked out of the sky by a mob of people whose hobby it is to bully him. So there's a long and rich tradition of Kaneko Man being bullied that precedes even the anime and the original chapters of the manga that most people are familiar with.
That poor guy.
And the kids dump water on him, and so his day got rained on after all. How sad. So in the next scene, we find Kaneko Man stumbling across a news broadcast starring one Adiran's Nakano, which I just realized, I don't think that we ever explained on podcast that Nakano Kazuo's nickname, Adiran's Nakano, is a reference to a prominent Japanese wig-making company, and the character himself is a caricature of a Shonen Jump editor. Many such caricatures of Shonen Jump editors appear in the Kaneko Man manga, Adiran's Nakano being the most prominent of them, and then he's the one who's given the big role in the TV series as a man with many interests and hobbies, here acting as a news reporter. And what a scoop he's got.
That's right. They're on the scene for the UFO from Kenkotsu Man that has landed there. There's going to be a bit of a distraction coming, though, first, and the police get involved. It's really quite the thing.
It really is quite the thing. Prior to that, we have a little puff piece in the news about a new trend in which superheroes are flying around with women. Not really much to say here other than a gag where Kinnikuman briefly impersonates a handsome superhero, but then the mask comes off, literally, and the girls run away and exclaim, "He stinks."
Which is funny to me that the mask shouldn't really hide that he stinks unless he put some sort of perfume on it or something. This is also where we find out that what Meat had to do that day that was his other business was also actually a date with Mari, so that further spoiled any chance that Kinnikuman's plan had of working there.
Yeah, yeah. Turns out he had 3 strikes against him before he even stepped up to the plate today. Poor guy. But he's finally about to meet himself an opponent. Well, he's already met an opponent more pathetic than himself in the form of Iwao. He's finally going to meet an opponent as pathetic as he is in Kinkotsu Man, where we proceed frantically to the next scene, a newscast covering the crashed UFO.
And this is the one where we're going to have the police getting involved again. The ramen shop owner, whose name escapes me.
Yosaku-san.
Right. Saku-san is going to show up here again as a streaker who is flashing the cameras and running around naked. That's what gets the police involved more so than the UFO. Except that they leave because they don't have time to chase naked idiots around all day, but sort of forgot somewhere in there to do anything about the UFO as well.
I really like it when Gobugari first catches Yosaku-san and is leading him away by the arm, and he says, you know, "You're a grown man now. You know, you gotta knock this off." And that's good. And then when he escapes from Gobugari's custody and ends up on top of the UFO doing his dance where he's covering and uncovering his genitals with fans in either hand, Gobugari yells at Adaran's Nakano, "Idiot, I don't have time to chase around naked men," and opens fire on the two of them, driving them from the scene, which honestly is more than he usually does to resolve a situation. So I think that we're going to have to count this as a rare victory for the Gobugari army.
One thing that struck me about this scene also is that they at one point go over from the UFO to where Kinkotsu-man is already in a giant form, sort of hiding between two high-rise buildings in the shadows there, and is correctly identified as the owner of the UFO, but by then he's already too big and the UFO is more or less the same size as him. It's no longer a plausible vehicle for him. I guess we just assume that, like Kinnikuman, the monsters can grow to giant form, and I know we've seen Kinkotsu-man in a normal size in the past, but something about that scene just struck me funny.
There's definitely something funny about the fact that he's hiding in almost plain sight while a giant. And it takes people until the UFO starts to glow and smoke and go crazy and him to laugh and start to emerge from the shadows for anyone to realize that there's a giant skeleton man with red boots and red gloves and a pistol and a cape and goofy hair and I think the kanji for bone carved into his skull head. So, but yes, everyone is, I guess, presuming that the ability to change size is just a common feature of super beings and monsters in this universe. And it kind of is in the early goings. We haven't reached the point where it would start to create problems in the narrative for people to become giants willy-nilly. Once things settle down and get a little bit more into in-the-ring pro wrestling, people sort of collectively agree to retcon and memory hold the whole turning giant ability, kind of like the Tenari and Beatazu eventually lose their teleportation powers late in the Blood War. But no one speaks of it, and you just kind of have to roll with it.
I actually wasn't aware of that. I guess that's a little off topic, but
off topic is what we do here on the MuscleBusting.com Super Muscle Cast, brought to you by at MuscleBusting on Twitter and twitch.tv/MuscleBusting. You can watch our Let's Plays there, and we will be similarly off topic.
Well, very good.
We probably won't play anything Blood War related, though, I'm sorry.
Oh, unfortunately. But, nonetheless, they're going to have a showdown in a baseball stadium that the subtitles flashed up some useful context for that I didn't quite get and retain all of.
Just that it's Korakuen Stadium, which was the Yomiuri Giants' home stadium prior to the Tokyo Dome being built in 1988. So that is where we kind of land on the useful factoid for pro wrestling fans. Here in 1983 anime land or 1979 manga land, there's not yet a Tokyo Dome for wrestlers to get 6 or 7 stars in. I'm not aware of the history of wrestling there, if any, so we should look that up and include that as an addendum that I will try to slip in artfully, but even though I'll be talking from the same distance into the same microphone in the same location, my voice will sound completely weird and different when I splice in this audio, so you can go ahead and enjoy that now. Unlike the Tokyo Dome, which is a noted venue for Japanese professional wrestling ever since the first show held there in April of 1989, NJPW's Battle Satellite in Tokyo Dome, Korakuen Stadium did not see much use historically as a wrestling venue. In my research, I was only able to track down 3 instances of it being used for professional wrestling. The first of these occurred during the 1951 Torii Oasis Shriners Club of Tokyo wrestling tour, notable for being the tour that contained the debut matches of Rikidozan, the godfather of Japanese professional wrestling. On November 18th of 1951, between 10 to 20,000 fans gathered at Korakuen Stadium to see Rikidozan go to a 10-minute time limit draw with Canada's Overa Aislinn in a show headlined by 6 3-round boxing matches featuring Joe Louis. The fact that this was a mixed wrestling and boxing show headlined by a boxer is probably why it's not listed in Wikipedia's list of professional wrestling attendance records in Japan. Professional wrestling returned to Korakuen Stadium in front of 15,000 fans in the 1955 Pro Wrestling International Big Competitions Tour by the JPWA. The main event saw Rikidozan and Azuma Fuji draw Jesus Ortega and Bud Curtis 1-1 in a 2-out-of-3 falls match, in which both Rikidozan and Curtis were injured at the end of the second fall and could not continue for the third. The undercard saw Kokichi Endo also go to a 1-1 draw against Bob Orton Sr. in a 2-out-of-3 falls match, and Toyonbori defeat Surugami, in case any of you are out there collecting former sumos turned Japanese pro wrestlers. Finally, on October 7th, 1957, in front of 30,000 fans, Rikidozan challenges Lou Thesz for the NWA World Heavyweight title in the first recognized heavyweight championship match to be held in Japan. The match would go to a 1-hour time limit draw. Aside from these 3 shows, no wrestling had been held in Korakuen Stadium prior to Kenkotsu Man's Muscle vs. Bone Challenge, the 4th and certainly least important wrestling show to be held here.
Well, unfortunately, this isn't going to start out particularly well for Kaneko-man, because Kenkotsu-man knows his and Meat's one weakness, being shot in the head with a gun.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Turns out Kenkotsu-man's an old-timey shooter, and he's got himself a gimmick, and in fact, in the manga, he has a slightly different solution. He pours milk on Kaneko-man, which nullifies the garlic powers, and Meat he shoots right in the face to break his glasses. So it's slightly different here, slightly simplified in the cartoon, and I don't necessarily prefer one version over another, but Yes, it's a magical gun that if you shoot Kaneko Man in the head, he loses his smell and powers. And as if that wasn't bad enough, he's got himself some kind of angry... What kind of animal would you describe Neck Thrower looking like? It's not quite an anteater, but it's definitely not quite an armadillo, but it's a little bit like maybe an elephant stegosaurus.
It's kind of like a sharper pangolin, perhaps? I don't really know.
Yes. But it is Neck Flinger, the kaiju under Kinkotsu Man's control that shows up, and it doesn't fling you by the neck. It grabs you with its long, kind of trunk-like neck that ends in a bunch of grabby little grabbers and tosses you around, and everyone is very worried about the safety of Kaneko Man, and Tandaru Natsuko says a little prayer hoping that that man will come and save them. And wouldn't you know it, it's Tuxedo Mask!
Yeah, Terry Man shows up to save the day, because he too has a gun, which is an important ability, as we just learned. So he's going to kill the monster and shoot the gun out of Kinkotsu Man's hands, which kind of evens things up. He also tosses some garlic that he got from America to Kaneko Man to help him get his strength back, and then doesn't really hog the spotlight any further than that. It's actually going to be one of those weird episodes where Kaneko Man actually starts to wrestle in a wrestling match type situation against Kinkotsu Man, and gets to kind of be showcased and fight him evenly and look somewhat competent at it.
Absolutely. Kinkotsu Man gets a little bit of offense in when he counters a headlock with a backdrop suplex. Kaneko Man, of course, follows Japanese move name conventions, which are mostly the same as those found in the United States of America, given that that slam-bang American pro wrestling is the origin of a lot of the terminology used in wrestling internationally, regardless of the language of the participants in the match. However, Japanese has a few little intricacies and differences of its own, such as referring to the belly-to-back suplex as a backdrop and referring to the vertical suplex as a brain buster, even if it is not a vertical drop vertical suplex. So Kaneko Man follows Japanese conventions in these matters, and so will we. But aside from that backdrop, Kinkotsu Man doesn't get a whole lot of offense as he is double choke lifted and giant swung and whapped with a chair. He does get some damage in when he and Kaneko Man hit each other with a double clothesline, but other than that, he's pretty much outclassed in this fight.
And we see the atomic drop. Always good to see the atomic drop.
It is always good to see the atomic drop. The atomic drop comes up as a follow-up to the giant swing where Kinkotsu Man is first thrown way into the air and then atomic dropped over Kaneko Man's knee in such a manner as it breaks his bones and causes his teeth to fall out and him to make a very sad-looking little frowny face.
Oh, poor guy. But this is maybe... I won't say a first, but it's rare that the big fight is entirely around showcasing that Kaneko Man is just superior to his opponent here. That's not something we've seen a lot of.
It isn't, and it's a fight that even if Adiran's Nakano doesn't put over Kaneko Man particularly hard, he puts over the fight. He declares, "Such speed! Has there ever been a fight as thrilling as this when they hit each other with the double clothesline? And I will ask you, Punch, has there ever been a fight as thrilling as this?"
That is an awfully broad question, and I don't know the best way to pose an answer to it. Probably.
I think it's likely. So Kaneko Man has a whole cheering section of meat and a couple of cheerleaders with yellow and blue. I don't really know why they go with that color scheme pom-poms, but they've got white and red outfits on, so those are Kaneko Man's colors closely enough. At the end of the fight, Kenkotsu Man is knocked into a pile of bones in Korakuen Stadium, and the fans come and they steal his bones.
And then, of course, the dog comes up and pees on his face.
As one does. In the manga, a dog just steals one of his bones, so there's an escalation in scatological humor here.
Oh, how rude. Very inappropriate.
Mm-hmm. So we've seen Kaneko Man come out ahead in a good old-fashioned pro wrestling match, beating his opponent with superior wrestling technique and not having to rely on an out like his funny face to get him through the match, or simply getting swallowed by a giant monster or ignored by monsters who don't want to lose their dignity by fighting him, or the various other ways that he gets out of these fights without having to triumph by physical skill or technical acumen. And so I say to you, Punch King, how do you feel about that? Is it finally time for our boy Kaneko Man to grow up and become a different kind of hero?
Well, I don't think it's going to happen all at once, but we are seeing a sort of transition from what we'd seen earlier into maybe that he can be cast now in more serious roles. This also continues on with what the last episodes had started, where there's going to be, it looks like, a little bit more of an emphasis on Kaneko Man's mostly failed romantic life. We do see his unwanted sort of stocky, heavyset admirer making another appearance right here at the end of this episode. And it feels like we're sort of shifting gears into something where maybe we're going to keep the comedic elements, and we've got the precedent established that, yeah, he loses fights to these monsters that nobody should lose to all the time, and he kind of sucks, but we're also going to be able to take him seriously, and he doesn't have to just win every fight by his enemies not showing up or a complete act of luck. So I think they maybe needed to go there at some point to keep it sustainable. And it seems like that I could be wrong. I'm going into this with no first-hand knowledge of the series, but it feels like that's the direction that we're headed in.
Absolutely. And like you say, they end this part of the episode by returning to the theme of Kaneko Man's failed love life, where after he has won his big victory over Kenkotsu Man, Natsuko is taking photos of Terry Man, of course, and Marie is off with meat, and the only person who wants to celebrate with poor Kaneko Man is the one person who was willing to fly around in the air with him at the beginning of the episode, a young lady with big eyebrows and a stocky build. And he tries to fly away, which is another power that they possess along with turning giant at this point in the series that gets wiped out of existence as time goes on. But but he tries to fly away and is unsuccessful in doing so, and the girl jumps on him, and we do the little zoom in on his, and we do the little circle closing in on his sad face at the end to close out this episode. And we will find a similar theme going throughout the next half of the episode 5B, which is titled Kaneko Man's Broken Heart. I'll take a moment at this point to note that at this point in the series, the two little halves that comprise the entire episode of a Kaneko Man cartoon don't always have unique title cards. They are reusing title cards from earlier in the series at this point, and it kind of makes me sad because there are a lot of, you know, fun little visual details in the show that I find quite compelling. the animation of Kinnikuman's face and muscular physique are always quite hilarious. But there is this issue where until you get to episode 8... No, actually, it's episode 7. You have this problem where until you get to episode 7, there is a tendency to use that title card of Kinnikuman sneaking with the shadow cast on the blue and green background that you first get in... the target is Nessie, and then you get that one of Kinnikuman putting his hand on his chin and looking dreamily up at the title of the episode that you get in the second half of episode 2, which is Save Planet Kinnik.
Yeah, they can, you know, they're just getting started out. It's their first run of episodes. It's their fifth episode overall. And animation can get expensive. I did note that we had the same scene where he eats garlic and then grows giant twice in this with the same animation. Mm-hmm. But...
And that's actually a reused animation from the very first episode. That's his first eating garlic and transforming giant animation. But this time they ended on the baseball field to try to disguise the fact that it's already recycled footage.
Well, I did not quite catch that. But, again, it's, you know, nowadays we have the CGI cartoons, and maybe for the worse in a lot of cases, but this being the early 80s, if they wanted a new bit of footage for that, somebody had to draw and animate it. Even with rotoscoping and things like that, that is going to require some outlay of resources, so they're conserving where they can. And given that, to my knowledge, this is still, you know, very much a franchise in its infancy, you know, coming in off the backs of a successful manga does not guarantee, in what I'd know about anime, which isn't much, that the, you know, television product or the cartoon is going to be successful or not. So, you know, maybe keeping the costs down was kind of a prudent measure to start here.
And so now we are on to 5B, Kinnikuman's Broken Heart, where we start with Kinnikuman in his shack in Beverly Park, Oda Ward, Tokyo, where he is listening to his own closing theme song sung by the pop star Saiko Yamaguchi, who is... that's the name used in the anime, and then in the manga, she's Nana Takahara.
Now, this is the first I recall of him having really this interest or fandom in her. And with as few episodes of the anime as we've had, it's not really surprising because there's a lot to get in. Is this something... Has he been established as a fan of hers in the manga before? How does this track with that storyline there? Or is this just generally a new thing that is just brought in on us?
Well, this is a consequence of the reordering of the chapters of the manga compared to the episodes of the anime. In the manga, this is actually chapter 2, so his fandom is being first established right here, right now, and it feels a little bit less natural being represented as such a big part of his personality now that we're a little bit later into the series, but like you say, we're still in the early goings and establishing things.
All right, yeah, it still is only the second half of episode 5, so it's, you know, it's not completely out of left field. I was just curious because I know that for certain elements of the manga, we're a little bit deeper in now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. And there's going to continue to be that tension of early versus late chapters as we continue to go. Our next episodes will get into the Chojin Olympics arc, which, although in the manga, means that we are past the days of Kinnikuman being an Ultraman parody and fighting various kaiju. In the anime, those early chapters of the manga are still frequently used to pad out one half of a two-chapter episode. And so we're going to see cases of early chapters of Kinnikuman continue to pop up when the series is actually in its more mature stage, and the various tricks that the writers of the anime do to try to incorporate those early chapters into the later continuity, much in the same way that they tried to retcon Kinkotsuman into being someone who had always had an interest in fighting Kinnikuman.
But for the time being, this episode is it's going to give us some pretty good stuff. I like the I liked catching that she was the one that does the ending song, which we've seen several times now. And yeah, of course, he's got a ticket by making the unimaginable sacrifice of cutting his daily gyuron intake from 12 bowls to 9.
That's nothing short of a miracle forged through blood, sweat, and tears.
Absolutely. And Meat sort of scoffs at that, but at the end of the scene, it turns out that he has a ticket too.
And this seems like a good time for our foray into a brief discussion of gyuron. I would like to announce that I am going to finally stop beating around the bush and make myself a nice hearty bowl of gyuron tomorrow. And then on the next episode, I will be back to report on that. But in addition to that, I would like to follow up on our previous conversation about whether it was plausible that Natsuko could have reached the age of, well, I'm going to look up how old she is. Natsuko Shono, all right, I thought that it listed these sorts of things on the Kinnikuman wiki, but I'm wrong about that. But
well,
based on the relative ages of everyone else in the series, we're going to say early 20s, so you asked if it was reasonable for a woman in her early 20s to have never tried gyuron before. And I came upon the rather interesting note in Japanese Cooking 101 that gyuron has a reputation for being particularly popular among men, teenagers to middle-aged, and is often thought of as a meal for the salaryman. So it's got a bit of masculine coding to it. Even if it is implausible that Natsuko had never tried it before, there is a certain amount of gendering of the whole, you know, teehee, I've never tried gyuron before, but I'll try it as a, I'll try a large.
I guess that is good to know for context. You know, it's definitely, we're overthinking this because it's a cartoon gag here, but anyway.
Anyway, yeah, and another thing about gyuron that I've learned from the blog Soy Sauce Sugar Mirin on Substack is that the significance of a bowl of Yoshinoya gyuron is the fact that you can walk into the restaurant any time of day and get a fresh homemade protein and carbs for 448 yen. It's the bare minimum one has to pay to be in a restaurant, you know. There's a ring of truth to Kinnikuman's quick, cheap, and delicious tagline in his gyuron song. Huh.
Well, that is good to know. I admit that while we were talking about this, I just wanted to see what my gyuron options were locally. It looks like if I want a bowl of gyuron delivered that I can eat, it's going to run a base price of $19.
Well, that's, I don't know, let's see, 19 USD in yen is 2,694 yen, so, you know, looks like you're kind of paying more than five times what you ought to be paying here.
Well, I'll consider it, because I do want to try it.
Now, is that the base price plus delivery fees, or would that be including delivery and tip and all of that?
Yeah, there will be additional delivery fees on top of that, but this is one of those delivery websites wherein sometimes they'll raise the prices even before all that. So it's possible that this could just be raised to an outlandish level here. But even so, like,
don't see myself meandering out to try this in-house necessarily, so I may have to pay this to get it.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. When I make some tomorrow, I'll put it in an envelope and I'll mail it to you.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. Well, thank you.
All right, so Kaneguman is queued up to go to the concert, and people are a-pushing and a-shoving, and wouldn't you know it, here comes the Gobugari army, and they pile out of their cars and start shooting at the crowd, which really seems to be their philosophy of shoot first and then bark orders later.
I like that that is their way to discourage people from pushing and shoving in line.
They certainly have they have their methods down, and Kaneguman joins in the efforts to get the crowd under control and exhorting the people that they have assigned seating, so being the first one in doesn't mean anything, so please quiet yourselves down. And then, of course, as soon as the voice announces the opening of the arena, he tramples over everyone to be in first. So while we see Saiko do her performance, we meet her manager, Hitoshi, who has been in love with her since childhood and is intending to confess his feelings to her after the concert tonight. We learn this from Adoran's Nakano, who has taken up some kind of position in the entertainment industry to be backstage with us when Kaneguman and a whole bunch of fans show up to interrupt Hitoshi's confession of his love for Saiko by demanding her autograph. It's little Adoran's Nakano who makes everyone form an orderly queue, and he's the one who decides that Kaneguman, the last one in line, will be the one cut off and not given an autograph at the end of the autograph signing. So Kaneguman and Hitoshi end up both sad side by side as Saiko and Adoran's Nakano shuffle away.
And that was what really kind of stuck out in my head, that it seems like Adoran's Nakano is performing the functions of the manager here a little bit more. And the other fellow, what was his name again?
Hitoshi.
It seems like Hitoshi was a guy that just happened to be there, and Adoran's Nakano was doing very managerish things. So it made me wonder if we were getting all of that in the translation, or if this was just one of those weird situations.
I think Hitoshi is just generally ineffectual, because he eventually does manage to catch up with Saiko, and she pretty much throws herself at him, first giving him an opportunity to express his feelings in words along with plenty of encouragement to do so, and then gives him an opportunity to express his feelings physically by leaning in for a kiss, and he blows it on both counts, so she declares him an idiot and storms out. So it's kind of unclear what sort of function he performs day to day other than having feelings that he can't express.
You wouldn't think that somebody that's that poor of a communicator would be a terribly effective manager either, but it kind of works in that she's angry when she comes out of the building, and so when Kaneguman tries to ambush her for an autograph, she rejects him, blows him off a couple of times, and then throws him through a brick wall. And this is just one of those gags that, you know, this pop star, this idol singer, or whatever it would be in the context of this, 1980s Japan, takes the giant superhero guy and throws him through a brick wall. So afterwards he bonks his head on it again, and then the bricks cave in and collapse on him. just kind of a funny little thing that struck me funny.
So back at the Kaneku house, Kaneguman is hatching a new plan in order to win Saiko's affections, and this one involves faking a monster attack. And in the little fantasy he has, where he imagines how he's going to do it, the monster is this great creation with eye stalks and three clawed sort of dinosaur feet and, mandibles and maybe a proboscis somewhere, and it's really quite a threatening monster. So he gets Meat to grab their phone book of monsters so Kaneguman can look up a kaiju henchman to help him in this scheme to look cool in front of Saiko.
I thought that it was funny that he has a phone book of kaiju henchmen, and that it's sort of played off like that he regularly does business with them, which sort of implies that they're his henchmen. Or definitely when they get in contact, they're, you know, seem to be sort of favorably inclined co-workers. It struck me as a very odd portrayal of this relationship that he has with these henchmen, given kind of the precedent beforehand.
Absolutely. It's definitely kind of an unprecedented and doesn't occur again sort of relationship that he has with monsters in this episode, or in this half of the episode. And the monster he ends up going with, probably because he'll work for a 500 yen note, is Gorozaimon, who is a gorilla-looking fellow whose power is he constantly has snot dripping out of his nose.
Of course.
Quite the pathetic fellow, but, you know, his ape-like countenance serves for what's to come.
Yeah, we're going to get sort of a King Kong parody going a little bit later. So for that, he's the right choice.
He is the right choice. So we find ourselves out in the park where Hitoshi and Saiko are off for a walk. Gorozaimon jumps out to menace them. Kinnikuman jumps in. They get into a fight. Gorozaimon decides, hey, this girl is cute and I look like an idiot getting beat up in front of her. So he starts to fight back for real and then kidnaps her and climbs to the top of a tall building.
Yeah, and in the midst of this, you know, when they're starting out having the fight, they kind of have a funny visual, I thought. I enjoyed that they're behind the bushes, so they can't really be seen what's going on, and they're just beating on metal pans with sticks to, I guess, simulate the sound of fighting. It struck me as funny. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, and even Yosaku-san wanders by with a watering can to ask them what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, Kinnikuman, incensed that he has been betrayed, uses his powers of flight to fly up to the top of the building, blinds Gorozaimon with a justice flash, and then kind of butt bumps him off the top of the building, catches him in midair, and throws him against the building. Doing so causes Saiko to fall off of the building. Gorozaimon is defeated. Kinnikuman turns himself into a parachute to help Saiko to the ground safely. And when she comes to, she sees Hitoshi standing over the fallen Gorozaimon and thinks that he is indeed the one who saved her in this episode. And so, once again, Kinnikuman's attempts to win approval from women have failed.
Yeah, but he did handily defeat the monster here, which is kind of a step up from the past. Although, I guess, if you can't defeat the gorilla monster who works for 500 yen notes and his special power is that he has snot coming out of his nose, it just obviously seemed like they were scraping the bottom of the barrel to get this guy.
That is true, although, you know, one of the marks of a good team is that they beat the bad teams on their schedule consistently. So in this episode, Kinnikuman is 2-0 against Kinkotsuman and Gorozaimon, two opponents who he is expected to be able to beat based on their relative power levels, and therefore he's gathering momentum. And that's good, because up next on the next Super Muscle Cast on MuscleBusting.com, we will have the first of the 20th Chojin Olympics arc episodes, which we are very excited about because it's where Kinnikuman finally starts to get serious, but not too serious, and evolves away from being about fighting monsters to that grand old sport of professional wrestling. And I think that Kinnikuman has picked himself up a good bit of momentum going into that.
Yeah, I look forward to it. It's going to be interesting that the previews that we saw, it looks like we're getting a couple of episodes about his ongoing struggles of popularity, especially where women are concerned, which has been kind of a recurring thing. They're not going too heavy on the romance, although this one, it had a pretty heavy romance element to it, just not with Kinnikuman. But it's definitely something that you can see the series has steered into a little bit. So maybe we'll get more of that.
It's something that the anime steers into more so than the manga. the romance elements. We see right now as well the burgeoning rivalry developing between Marie Nakaido and Tandoru Natsuko. We didn't talk about it at the time, but when everyone was gathering outside Kinkotsuman's spaceship, there was a exchange where Tandoru Natsuko notices Marie and says, "So this is the famous Mari. She looks innocent, but I wonder how many men she's deceived." And Kinnikuman declares, "I'm the 69th, which I assume that in the original Japanese, they had some other number that was high enough to imply that she's a slut and also maybe functions as some sort of cultural funny sex number in the way that 69 does. And Mari initially sells this by crying, and then says, "You're so cruel, Kinnikuman, also you're the 100th. And Kinnikuman, who is interested in her, is shocked and horrified by this news, and he starts to cry, and she admonishes him, "See, it's not so funny, is it?" And so that ends up being another sort of case of Kinnikuman getting his just desserts in his interactions with women, but it's also the first example of cattiness between the two main female characters in the series, which is a theme that we will see explored as the Chojin Olympic arc takes place and rolls
on. Well, I'm looking forward to it. That will be, I guess, next time, though. We've had a pretty good run with this one. Any final thoughts?
I just like to let the listeners know that they've probably gotten used to hearing us on a weekly schedule here on MuscleBusting.com and on the YouTube MuscleBusting channel. We recorded these Kaiju Extermination Arc episodes as a batch all together in spring and summer 2023 in various disparate recording sessions, and then tried to release them on a reasonable schedule. We might be taking a little bit of a break before we start releasing the Chojin Olympics episodes, but not too long. So you're going to have that to look forward to. And stay tuned to more of our projects on MuscleBusting.com, including MuscleCraft, every Saturday at, well, many Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Twitch.tv/MuscleBusting. Any last words, Punch? I'm going to kill you. No, sorry. Anything else you want to say, Punch, before we sign off on this episode?
You know what? I'm just going to fold. No. God help me.
God help us all. Rock on, Punch.
Rock on, TG Moxley. Hachame Jason Hashi Superhero. Fine,